Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
The Share Pickers Podcast with Justin Waite. Building wealth through investing. For more information, visit sharepickers.com. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. People in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the Share Pickers Podcast, episode 2. And this podcast is entitled, Find a Job You Enjoy Doing, and you will never have to work a day in your life. That's by Mark Twain. Before I go on, I just want to say thank you so much for all the positive feedback I've had for episode 1. I've never released a podcast that's generated so much positive feedback. So I really appreciate that. And if I can ask you, just if you'd liked it and you like this one, please give a positive rating and review on Apple, iTunes, whatever you can, and you know, and subscribe on the platform of your choice, whether it be Spotify or Audioboom or Apple, whatever it is. But thank you very much. So back to that quote. Find a job you enjoy doing and you'll never have to work again in your life. I believe this. I mean, I love investing. It's not a job. And it's more than a hobby. It's a passion. In fact, I've tried hobbies and no hobby is stacked up to invest in. I loved it. But luckily, you know, I'm obsessed with this investing, and it's something that can give you financial independence. And it's achievable in a reasonable time frame. If you put the effort in and you have a strategy to pick, you know, good, growing, improving businesses that fit that strategy, you can make lots of money, build wealth. You know, and this is why I set up the Share Pickers Investment Club, to share my experience and the lessons I've learned. And you can go to work all your life, and you can make other people wealthy, you know, and not enjoy that job. Maybe you do enjoy it, but you're not building wealth for yourself, you know. And you could do that by investing. I always keep saying this. Two ways to build wealth, pretty much. Own a successful business or a share of one. And this is what investing is all about. Now, you can break your life down into three sections. I've always thought this. There's sleep, work, and free time. Everyone enjoys sleep, okay? If you can get good sleep, some people can't sleep that well. But if you do enjoy sleep, then let's take that away because that's subconscious. So your conscious life, there's work and free time. You know, you enjoy your free time, it's up to you. It's your independence, you can do what you want. If you don't enjoy work, you don't enjoy half of your conscious life. So it's very important to find something you enjoy doing. You know, something you actually look forward to going to work for, you know? I want to rewind back because someone said recently, I enjoyed episode 1, your rags to riches story. I've been poor, but I've come from, you know, a very good upbringing. My father's done very well as a businessman. He started with very little, and he's a workaholic. I've always envied two things about my father. One, he didn't stop working nonstop. His work ethic, you know, 7 days a week. He had a car sales. He's got a car sale still, and he's at late 70s. But 7 days a week he used to work there, 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. That was the opening hours. And then he did work about 7 days a week, and then he started taking the Sunday off when it started going well. And he used to play golf. He's been the golf course at 7:30 on a Sunday morning, so he never stopped. But I remember years ago he used to do car sales. And the second thing I liked about it, never scared to take a risk, even when we had a young family, you know, when we were young kids. And I remember going from, you know, a terrace house into a nice big sort of five-bedroom detached house. And that's, my mother said, you know, my father's worked for every nut and bolt in this garage. But he's done everything from, I remember going up to London on Sundays, early Sunday mornings, he'd go up to London and buy some leather jackets, some sheepskin coats in the 80s, bring them back to South Wales and sell them. He used to do jewellery. He's even had caravans in Barcelona. You know, he's tried everything. And he's always worked hard and always taken risks. And I've always envied that side of my father there. But when we were in Blackwood Comprehensive, me and my brother, I was 12 and he was doing his O-levels. We're in the local comprehensive. And my mother's a teacher, so she's got qualifications, academic qualifications. So is my father, but he dropped out of university to do sort of business stuff and, you know, start his own business. So my brother got two O-levels. And this, obviously, to my parents, wasn't acceptable. So they said, right, you are going to private school, to boarding school, to my brother, you know. And Justin, you're going with him. I said, what? What have I done? So we were, at the time, my father was doing quite well, business doing well, so we could afford it, you know. So we were shipped off to Brecon, Christ College Brecon, boarding school. And I always remember the first day there, I was like, what, 11, 12, and I had to put on this really stiff uniform, Harris tweed jacket that was itchy, the collar was tight. I mean, the comprehensive, you know, wear and collar undone, it was quite a lax uniform. But standing there, ready for chapel at about 7:30 in the morning, because we had to go to chapel, standing by the gates of the school with an empty, hollow feeling in my stomach to be homesick. I just wanted my mother to sort of pull up to the gates and say, no, we've made a mistake. Hop in. We're taking you home. Go back to your normal school. It never happened, of course. And I always remember being so homesick at times, you know, having sort of holidays and then term times and then going back to school and literally for days beforehand, almost having a dodgy stomach, being so nervous going back to boarding school. But so my brother got resat his fifth form to redo his O levels, and he managed to get two more. And so I think he went to work for my father in the garage. I did better with my O levels there, and I got sort of six or seven. And the problem came with A levels, but this is where I discovered investing for the first time. A level economics, Mr. Barry Williams, right? Nice Welsh lad, likes his rugby, and he should teach these, you know, economics. It's supply and demand, and inelastic supply and demand goes up. And this was a very dry subject, A-level economics. And it was, you know, hard to keep awake. And then, I don't know what term it was, but I always remember him saying, right, the last 4 weeks of this term, we're going to do a stocks and shares competition, all right? I thought, what? And I sort of knew about stocks and shares. Because, you know, of course I'd heard about them. There was the 80s, and so yuppies were about, and stocks, you know, stockbrokers were now making loads of money and all this stuff. But also, my granddad, I remember my granddad once, he worked in the coal mines of South Wales. Of course, the mines of South Wales, coal mines, one of the biggest employers at the time. Obviously, the industry died off. But he was like head electrician, I think, for entire South Wales. Had a good job. And I think through nationalisation or something, he had some shares. But back then, I don't know if you remember this, if you're old enough to remember this, there's only two ways you could check, if you're a retail investor, not an institutional investor or professional, there's only two ways you could check share prices. One was in the newspapers next day, but the most dynamic way of checking them was via teletext. No, and this wasn't dynamic. So my grandfather, quite a shrewd guy, said, listen, boys, sit there next to the telly and check my stock price. Now, how it worked was they'd have like A to H. Companies beginning with A to H, for example, and they'd have pages and pages and pages of these companies beginning, whose name began with A to H. And so they'd have 50 stocks on page one, and you'd go like through 26 pages. Each page would take like a minute or a minute and a half to switch to the next page. Should I sit and wait for your stock to come round, you know? And then if you missed it, me and my brother would be sitting there, we'd end up fighting, you know, with a low attention span. But if you missed it, you'd have to wait again for another 20 minutes or half an hour to get your price up. But I was transfixed by these, you know, numbers. They were fascinating, just looking at these names and numbers and seeing the stock prices change when the page came round again. Wow. That's nuts. That's crazy. And me and my brother had a fascination with it. But back to that competition, A-level economics stocks and shares competition. I got obsessed with it. I used to go to the library every day to check the prices in the FT and start underlining the prices, you know? I didn't do very well. But it really, you know, got my enthusiasm going. The trouble is, though, I failed my father and my parents in private school, so I should have had a good start there. What happened was I got suspended. And it was just the weekend before A-levels, and, you know, we wanted to go uptown for a drink. We're not allowed uptown for a drink, essentially. But we sneaked out. We took some bikes from school, sneaked up. We had a few drinks, came back in, drove in through the gates. We knocked a teacher, me and the guy called Dave, I think, Dave Andrews. But we knocked a teacher over on the way back in, just ran back to our sort of studies, went to bed straight away. Next thing I know, there was a knock on the door. Sunday morning, a knock on the door. This third former said, Mr. Cousins wants to see you. Mr. Cousins was a housemaster. There's five different houses in Brecon. I said, okay. I said, oh, no. So I went downstairs and knocked on the door. Come. Door opened. Go and see the headmaster. That's all he said to me. Oh, so it was like a, you know, a 5 minute walk over to the headmaster's office. So I walked in there. He said, sit down. Right, you are rusticated for 2 weeks. And I'd never heard the term rusticated. Rusticated, what's that, sir? You're suspended for 2 weeks. I said, I've only got 2 weeks left of my, you know, my exams. Well, so be it. Either you find a way to make it here to sit your exams, or you sit them at a local school. I mean, I always remember phoning my father when I'd been suspended on Sunday morning. Now, I had to go over the road next to the dairy, it was called. It's a shop that sells ice creams and stuff. There's a phone box there. No mobile phones back then, of course. There's a phone box there, and I called my father. And it's unusual for their kids to, you know, to call their parents. He picked up the phone. He said, yeah? I said, Dad, I've been suspended. And the phone line just went quiet. Nothing was said. I thought, did he hear what I said then? And he said, you arsehole. I spent all that money on you. You arsehole. Man, I never felt so low in my life as that, you know, father-son conversation. I felt like completely let him down because my father worked all his life really hard to get his business going, you know. And then he invested in us, put us in private school because my brother failed his O-levels in comprehensive. And I'd failed him. Now, luckily, I'd passed my driving test. I was 17 then, because, of course, I'd been driving cars instead of about 10, because my father had a car sales. So I was, but at 17, you'd drive like a maniac. I remember several times I nearly killed myself on the Brecon Beacons roads, racing, overtaking cars. By the time I got to do my, you know, A-levels on a daily basis, I was my adrenaline was pumping. Anyway, I got 3 E's. I think I was predicted to get 3 B's, I got 3 E's. And so that, I thought, well, I can't really go to university. My plan to go to university didn't work out. So I ended up just going through a series of low-paid jobs, you know. I mean, I think I started off working, sort of cleaning cars for my dad, just in the garage. And I was so fed up with it, I decided to go travelling. And I started off as a plan with loads of friends, going travelling for like a year, took a year out. And I ended up, they all started dropping out. I ended up going on my own, which is a good thing, because I met people. But I literally hitchhiked from South Wales down to France. I remember being, you know, walking overnight by the side of a French motorway somewhere and being threatened by a German tourist. I tried to get into a hotel late at night, but I was on my own. But I got to the Winter Olympics, Albertville, met up with some other people there, got a job there washing dishes in a French hotel, and we got ski passes, had an excellent time. Met a guy called Tim from New Zealand, who was a fantastic guy. I'm not in contact with him anymore, but just had, you know, months of just drinking and skiing. And then I moved on to down through Europe, down to sort of Israel. I worked on a mushav, picking melons. That was so hot and so hard, back-breaking work. But I travelled about 9 months, and I came back home, and I couldn't settle. I went back to my parents' house, and, you know, I started working again for my father, I think, just cleaning cars. I said, you know, I got so disruptive. My father, who's normally a calm man, basically said, well, get out, leave. Leave the house. Every day you're creating an argument in the house. Because I basically wasn't happy with my life. You know. So I went to London. I didn't have a job. I shared a house in Kilburn with a load of Aussies and Kiwis. I got some temporary work loading newspapers in the back of vans that, you know, distribute newspapers in the mornings. Very early morning. It was backbreaking stuff. Again, paid nothing, you know. And then I decided to be a courier. Just had a car. So I had a courier. I was driving packages around London. And then my car packed up, and I sort of take it home, and so I decided to go back to London without the car. And I was skint, you know, so I basically signed on. I had to move into a house that wasn't fit to be rented, essentially. It was a dive. Really awful. I was sharing with two guys there, an Afro-Caribbean guy, an African guy, who never got on, always shouting at each other, almost fighting all the time. I remember being embarrassed. My father, mother and father wanted to come to London once to visit me. I said, I can't, you know, I put them off. I was just embarrassed to show my house thing. I met them in the West End. I didn't let them come back to my house. And even a friend of mine from South Wales, who was in London at the time, he'd done a degree and all that stuff. He saw my place and he said, you shouldn't be living in here. It's, you know, and at the time I was absolutely skint, shopping on a budget. And I remember buying cheap own brand stuff in Summerfield in the supermarket. This is I moved from Kilburn to Kensal Green there, in Kensal Rise. And I was buying, don't buy own brand tea bags, they're disgusting. I don't know what they put in them. It tastes like sawdust in a bag. But I was buying all own brand stuff. I remember buying even a cheap can opener, and it didn't work. And so I had to buy another one, you know. And when you have that little money, it's almost heartbreaking when it's something that you have to buy something again. And it really is. I was ashamed to actually ask my parents for money, for help, because I'd sort of let them down. They'd invested in me, you know, in the private school, and I'd failed, essentially. And I remember once seeing this advert for making toys at home. You can make these stuffed toys and work from home and earn money, but you had to send off 50 quid. I didn't know it was a scam, you know, so I sent off. I got this sort of example packed back. They said, see how well you can do it. The scam was, make one, we'll send you the equipment for one, and if it's good quality, we'll take you on. And you can earn lots of money doing this. It was impossible to make one. It was like, it was just a scam. And so that 50 quid I couldn't afford. You know, I remember calling my mother saying, can you transfer me some money, Mum? I'm skint, that kind of thing. This is after going to a cash point and, you know, trying to put my card in and just getting no money out. And I was on the way to the supermarket and I just had no cash. And so it's a real low point. And then luckily there was a sort of recruitment happened for Marks and Spencers in the City of London. And I got the job, and basically minimum hours contract then. You had to try and get as many hours as possible to make ends meet. And it was right in the heart of the City of London, and there was two new shops there, a sandwich shop and a big department store with big glasses there, big glass windows. I remember serving these stockbrokers who came in expensive suits, and I was thinking, this is what I want. This is what you are doing, what I want to do. They were buying, you know, lunch that I couldn't afford to buy on a daily basis. I couldn't afford to buy lunch out like they were every day. What I did do, though, I started going in and out on the tube, of course. And I started buying the Financial Times again. And I started, when I get back to home, underlining stock prices. I couldn't afford to invest. But I used to read about them on the way there and then get back home, have little highlighter pens. And always used to highlight different companies I'd read about. And I started buying the Investors Chronicle, which really pushed the boat out budget-wise. But luckily I was, you know, got a decent sort of then hours in Marks and Spencer's. Do you know what I loved about Marks? That you could buy food in the canteen cheap. All their food was very good, and you could take some home as well, so that was good. But I understand what it's like, you know. It's awful not having options and being skint, and really, you know, going from day to day, thinking, you know, if anything came up, like I said, you know, I lost 50 quid in that scam, it sinks you, being that close, you know, to not having any money. But that got me back into the passion again of, you know, of looking at stocks and shares and realising, maybe this is a way out. When I have money, I'm going to invest. And I went out with a mate of mine in London who, you know, did a degree and he had a good job. And he was out with his mates and they went drinking and they went on to go to a restaurant. And I said, I ducked out because I couldn't afford to, you know, split the bill with them. And I thought, I'm going to have to get better qualified. So I moved back home. And I started at Cardiff sort of Polytechnic. It wasn't called Cardiff Polytechnic, Cardiff Uni, but a business information systems degree. I decided to start doing that. And also it was the time when I think Chris Evans was rising to fame on radio. And he inspired me. And I started doing hospital radio at the same time. And I thought, okay, I'm going to either do business or radio. And I did a couple of demos, sent them off to Red Dragon FM in Cardiff. And I heard no reply. I kept sending them, but, you know, got no action there at all. And then I got thrown off hospital radio for doing jokes about Fred West on the radio, which wasn't good. And then I got, eventually I got a reply from Red Dragon FM. They asked me to come in and do a demo with the breakfast show guys. And I got out and about doing silly stuff on the road, just talking to people in the morning, and they gave me the gig. So I dropped out of university. I thought, I'm going for this. And I started working at Red Dragon, and it paid decent money. And for the first time ever in my life, I think it was 26 years of age, 27, I started getting a decent wage. I started earning enough money to start investing and even got a mortgage on a flat. And I bought one flat and I sold it. In fact, bought it for my auntie, sold it, then bought a flat in Cardiff Bay. And within 2 months of owning the flat in Cardiff Bay, a job in Capital Radio came up with Johnny Vaughan, Denise Van Outen and all that stuff. And I moved there, but I had enough money to start investing. And so I loved radio. I loved investing. And as I mentioned, I went through another rough patch after leaving Capital Radio, and that was worse then because I had a kid on the way. Megan, my lovely wife, I've got to mention, she listened to the first episode and why didn't you mention me more? So I said, okay. So my gorgeous wife, Megan, we've got two kids now, Monty and Fred. But at that time, when I was skint the first time, it's not too bad, just me. I had time in front of me to improve. But when I got to 40 and became skint, that was scary, you know, because I couldn't afford the rent. I'd lost my mortgage payments, mortgage deposit, and I had a kid on the way. But I realise now, looking back, like I said, if you were listening to this and you were 40 or 50 or 60, you've got time. You know, I realise now, you know, you're not washed up by 40. In fact, I realise the first 40 years were the practice years. The next 40 is a time to put into practice what you've learned. And I've always had a problem finding something I really enjoy doing, you know. And so you've got to find something you enjoy doing. If you don't like your job, but you like investing, the good news is you can make it your job. A hobby, a passion that pays very well. But you have to do some work and you have to get a strategy. You know, you have to find good growing businesses, not share price, not trading a share price, but investing in businesses. And it'll take some time. Like I say, imagine the job you have now. If you have a job, how good you are and how competent you've become and how long it's taken you to do that, to get there, okay? Same with becoming an investor. People think they can jump into investing or trading and they can do it within a year, 2 years. It takes longer than that. But every year, you get better. You make less losses and make more money. I mean, you imagine if you trained to become a plumber, electrician, or IT, or an accountant. It takes time. You need to learn to get competent, become good at it. I don't know if you've heard of that 10,000-hour rule. It was popularized by Malcolm Gladwell in his book, Outliers. And it basically says 10,000 hours of practice makes you very good, almost close to expert. And how much is that? So if you devote 3 hours per day to research and investing, you become very good at it. That's 9 years or 3,333 days. But you can become competent and you can make money way before that. You know, within 3-4 years, you could start making good money. By the time you're at 10 years, you become good. You can make, you know, financially independent, freedom, building your own wealth. You can do what you want then. Like I said, I still love investing. I will never stop investing. I love it. And I'm going to reiterate that phrase. Find a job you enjoy doing, and you will never have to work a day in your life. Investing can do that for you. You can enjoy it, and you can build wealth at the same time. Thanks for listening to episode 2. If you've liked it, please give it a rating and review on the platform of your choice, wherever you are, but Apple iTunes if you could, because that's where they're most searched. And, subscribe. Follow. And until next week, thanks very much.
The Share Pickers Podcast with Justin Waits. Building wealth through investing. For more information, visit sharepickers.com. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. People in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.